Hey, hey, and happy Friday. It is Adrienne Lawrence, and I am at the mic for John Iadarola, who is nursing the baby, which I can definitely dig. This is the Damage Report. I'm excited to be with you today because we have so many exciting things to talk about, and of course, plenty of nonsense. And there's no one other than Brett Ehrlich that I would want to discuss the nonsense. Brett.
I got my undergraduate degree in nonsense, so I do feel particularly capable of talking about most of the stuff on the rundown. I will promise to be serious when the stories get serious. Luckily, many of them are quite ridiculous, so I'm very excited to talk about them with you.
Yes, I'm excited too, because there is a level of nonsense that I think it's like it's nearing tomfoolery, but not quite. But there's definitely a Tommy Tuberville foolery that is going on. And we'll definitely get to that. But in the meantime, definitely follow us on Instagram, on Twitter, X, and all the other places, because we're streaming, we're live, we want to hear your comments. And we also have plenty of comments for you from our former president. Watch this.
A full subpoena power because of the freedom of speech, sham indictment by crooked Joe Biden, deranged Jack Smith and the DOJ. It has just been reported that the unselect January 6th committee, they are unselect indeed, of political hacks and thugs has illegally destroyed all of their records and their documents. So they took all of their records, all of their documents, they reported it, tried to get me indicted and probably did, and then he destroyed everything. This is unthinkable, and the fake political indictment against me must be immediately withdrawn. The system is rigged and corrupt, very much like the presidential election of 2020, and we have plenty of proof on that. We are a nation in decline, but we'll turn it around. We have no choice.
It's always wild to me to know that that man is sober, because you would just think that there was a blood alcohol level going on there. But hey, I'm just gonna leave that there, because we know that with that video last night, which Trump posted, and the groobly globally he had to say, you know, the reality is he has multiple legal problems going on. And you would think that instead of just posting a video online, that he would wait, because he said he had a press conference coming up. Remember, he teased hosting a major news conference at his Bedminster, New Jersey Golf Club. He said it was going to be next Monday morning, and he also promised that he was going to release evidence that would be an almost complete report, basically exonerating him. And apparently, well, that got canceled on advice of counsel. We know this, rather than releasing the report on the rigged and stolen Georgia 2020 presidential election on Monday, my lawyers would prefer putting this, I believe, irrefutable and overwhelming evidence of election fraud and irregularities in formal legal filings as we fight to dismiss this disgraceful indictment by a publicity and campaign finance inky DA who sadly presides over a record-breaking murder and violent crime area, Atlanta. Therefore, the news conference is no longer necessary. Oh, that's always cute how Trump likes to deflect and kind of just make things up. Brett, before we move on to the Trump updates on at least one of his cases, what do you think is really possibly going on here?
I think what's possibly going on, like when people are on video and you see them, like I am, from the shoulder up, frequently the joke is that they're in their underpants. But in Trump's case, you can really picture it. Like the way that he stands and is swaying like a little boy at a recital, or maybe like he looks like he's peeing, like at a urinal. It's what it looks like to me. I love that. I also love when people say that every accusation is just a confession. 100% that's what Trump is doing in that message that you just read when he says that this is a publicity and campaign finance seeking DA. Since day one, Donald Trump's playbook has been to do the stuff that no one else will do. In some cases, that's actually good for in politics. People don't like politics as usual, and they want someone who seems refreshingly honest because they don't talk like the stilted politicians. People like that. But in this case, he just does whatever he feels is in his best interest and suits his fancies. In this case, he thinks his best interest since the election is to deny the results and go out and systematically try to get results he wants by essentially, my view is, like engaging in things that are really dangerous to democracy, period. And I would say illegal. You can't, like, when people say conspiracy to overturn the election, when you're calling like the Raffensperger and asking him to find 11,000 votes for you, that should be, and we will shortly find out, probably is illegal. Yep. But
you know what's not illegal, Brett? Making these little promises of having this exoneration conference so that you can continue to beef up your MAGA audience and that they will continue to open their wallets to you. And you'll keep getting the points. And these are so many other things, but let's just pause real quick and jump into what we know about his federal election interference case, the one that's going on in DC. Because as we talked about yesterday, Judge Tanya Chutkan, she wants to try this case ASAP. And also the prosecutors, they do too. They've requested a January 2nd trial date. That's January 2nd, 2024, which is a little less than 6 months from now. Well, of course, in response to their request, Trump's lawyers, they displayed a Trumpian level of audacity. They demanded a trial date of April 2026. Yeah, 2026. Here's their rationale. Trump's defense cited the enormity of discovery as one massive hurdle to a trial, saying the defense would need to review 99,000 pages per day to finish the government's initial production by December 11th. Its proposed date for jury selection, the equivalent of 78 copies of Tolstoy's War and Peace. In total, a tower of paper more than 8 times as tall as the Washington Monument if printed out and stacked. The government's proposal is flatly impossible, his attorney said. No defendant can reasonably review nearly 100,000 pages of discovery per day. And as someone who used to produce discovery and also review discovery, it can be done. Yeah, that's why you have attorneys reviewing documents and whatnot. But then again, we know that Trump's seen all the documents anyways, if not sold them. But I also find it to be quite ironic by virtue of the fact that, well, Trump has always been condemning these prosecutors for their dilatory nature and taking forever to bring these cases against him. Yet all of a sudden he wants to delay, delay, delay. Brian Tyler Cohen made that observation on Twitter. He had pointed out, Trump, why did prosecutors need to take 2.5 years to bring the Fulton County case to trial? And also, Trump, we're seeking an April 2026 trial date 2.5 years from now. Yeah, it's cute. Well, we know that one of the reasons for prosecutors in the court wanting a trial date a lot sooner, because they know how Trump acts up, particularly in the media. So at the initial hearing last week, she warned, as in the judge warned Trump and his lawyers against out-of-court statements that could be seen as intimidating or harassing potential witnesses or prejudicing potential jurors, saying that she will take whatever measures are necessary to safeguard the integrity of the proceedings, and that the more inflammatory statements there are, the greater the urgency will be to go to trial. Judge Chutkan is absolutely on point. She wants to confirm the trial date at the next scheduled hearing, August 28th. That's about 10 days from now. And she has good reason to, because Trump is an absolute wild card. And so let's not delay the trial. Allow him to continue to beef things up when this could be dealt with and dismissed as soon as possible. Last I checked, that whole justice delayed is justice denied thing, it still holds somewhat true. Brett, your thoughts?
But if you're a criminal defense lawyer, then justice delayed is business as usual. That's all you ever want, especially when your client is seeking the presidency of the United States. I think it's fascinating. I've had this conversation with John last week about like what date should they set the trial at? I mean, all these people, I love that you asked like a Republican in like 3 different instances whether there should be a speedy trial, and they'll be like, if it's an immigrant, now send them, don't even do the trial, send them back, they're all terrorists. But if it's your beloved president, it's like, well, let's not be too hasty about this.
No, you're absolutely spot on. They want to delay, 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 also because people are going to be worn out and tired in 2026. He may take the presidency, let's hope not. And of course, you know, he wants the opportunity to quote unquote pardon himself. And all of these things that are completely and totally illogical and fearfully possible. But something that is also illogical and fearfully possible is Fox News keeping up their antics.
I remember when you appointed me to the NEC and we talked about all this, and you said, well, you said to me, I'm a better negotiator than you are. And you were quite right, absolutely.
Did I say that? I don't think I'm not sure that I said that.
You did, and I took it well.
I consider you to be.
I took it well.
By the way, just to interrupt for a second, I was really impressed with the fact, because you were always a sort of not a believer in tariffs, and you became a believer in tariffs, and I greatly respected that.
Well, okay, thank you, sir, especially China tariffs.
Yeah.
Those married men flirting on live television, they know better. Yeah, that clip, it really set the theme for Trump's latest interview with his former economic advisor turned Fox News host, that's Larry Kudlow. And Trump sat down with Kudlow for this fawning interview. Of course, they had to address the former president's many indictments.
It's a witch hunt. It's just a continuation of a witch hunt. They want to silence you. They want to silence you. And they mean silence. They are. I think they're sick people. I think they are people that have no idea how the world works, and they have no idea the anger they cause. You know, we have a tremendous group of people in this country, and I'm not just talking about Republicans. We have them on both sides, and we have a lot of them. And when they watch this witch hunt, this disgusting situation, where they do it for publicity, where they do fundraisers based on, you know, she, in her case, and they're all bad, but in her case, because I have four of them now, if you look, I mean, this is not even possible, four, over the next last couple of months. And frankly, it discredits everything. And they're all very similar in the sense that they're, there's no basis for them.
Oh, wow, isn't that such a beautiful thing to act like the will of the people, which would be a grand jury issuing the indictment, is a prosecutor going rogue. Well, we know that since Fox News really does like to pretend to be all about the marketplace and commerce and whatnot, that they had to praise Trump's economic viabilities as a president.
30 months into it, Biden's inflation rate, 7.4% at an annual rate. Yours, less than 2%, 1.9%.
It was actually a perfect number, too.
Unbelievable.
You're a student of inflation, right? You know how inflation. But literally, 2% is the perfect number. They actually don't want it to be zero.
Yeah.
They want it to be 2%, and we hit 2%, if you think, 1.9%.
And by the way, I love your commentary, but look at this. Grocery prices, food at home, the level is up 20%. Under your administration, 2% again. And then finally, on gasoline, Biden's back to 3.87. That's this week.
Going up.
Yours was around $2 a gallon, actually.
That's right.
This is the stuff that's driving people crazy. I don't know that anyone's interviewed a president before and done all these numbers, but you know, I know you like to do the numbers, and this is the story. There was a Trump boom, and there's a Bidenomics bust.
Oh, wow. Can we get a fact check? Yeah, we can. The job market has remained one of the economy's strongest pillars during Biden's presidency, with the unemployment rate slipping from 6.3% in January 2021 to a 54-year low of 3.4% in January. And this is all via Forbes. However, widespread layoffs in recent months may be starting to have an impact, with last month marking the worst job growth since 2020, as the unemployment rate clocked in at 3.5%. Gas prices soared to their highest levels ever last year amid shock from Russia's invasion from Ukraine. And through the price, I know the price at the pump has come down dramatically. The $3.66 average cost per gallon last week was 54% higher than the week preceding Biden's inauguration. So yeah, that would be when Trump was president, despite crude oil prices slipping. And lastly, headline, economic output was strong during Biden's watch, as US gross domestic product rose 20% to $26.1 trillion from the last quarter of 2020 to the same period last year, buoyed largely by outsized gains in manufacturing and spending on entertainment and leisure. All said, the fact check shows that Trump and Fox News weren't necessarily telling the truth, which is very interesting, as we know they are very truthful individual people and companies. But still, well, we know that finally Kudlow had to conclude the conversation by sneaking in just basically one more laughable claim, but this time, of course, about Trump's campaign.
Can I just add one thing, sir? I don't think people know this. Your campaign, you and your advisors in the campaign, you're putting out all these great videos. You're putting out white papers on issues left and right, and millions of people are reading this stuff. I mean, you're running an issues-oriented campaign. That's one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you about this stuff today.
Oof, the softball's there. Brad, did you enjoy that interview?
Oh my God, that was one of the best things I've ever seen. I can't believe we can show it because I think it's technically pornography. The moment when Kudlow at the very beginning in that first interview is complimenting Trump, and I've never seen someone try to bow while sitting down. Like he literally like bows his head. Yes, sir. Thank you, sir. Can I have another? That kind of stuff. This economic picture and this weird game of Twister that Republican elites like Larry Kudlow, like, you know, business news guy Larry Kudlow and, you know, media slash quasi real estate mogul Donald Trump have to twist themselves into is just hilarious. Because, you know, having Trump say to Kudlow, like, you came around on tariffs, and then in the next breath, talk about the consumer price index. Like, everybody who is on the Republican side of the aisle will tell you that the reason that they originally were for free trade before like the Obama era economics kind of and neoliberal economics twisted the Democratic Party into a more, you know, a less protectionist stance, we'll say, put it that way. The Republicans will tell you that they didn't like tariffs. And then when you add tariffs, what it does is make things more expensive because you're just kind of charging more for them to get to America, or they have to be American made. And we have a higher GDP, we have a higher standard of living technically than other countries, dollar for dollar. So the overall price that raises it. Now, typically, Democrats have been on the side of saying, like, yeah, the reason that I like protective tariffs is the same reason I like unions, is because they protect the worker in America from the BS that the corporations are doing. And that brings me to the next point, which is like watching unemployment go up as a result of raising interest rates. Like, that's literally the plan to stop inflation. And that's sadly what a lot of people do, is they raise interest rates so that getting money is more expensive, so that like running a business is more expensive, so that they essentially have to fire people. They can't afford as many workers. And because of that, it puts a downward pressure on overall prices. That's their logic. But what's really happening, and what the government has even admitted, is all of that interest rate raising, all of this hand wringing from the Republicans in that interview is just a charade. Because they know that during all of this time when they say it's hard to be a business, they're raking in record corporate profits. And that's why they're keeping prices high. They don't have to. They don't have to at all. They just want to give more money to their shareholders. And who are their shareholders? The people that watch Larry Kudlow. The people that love Larry Kudlow. And now Larry Kudlow has found a way to basically pretend that he's a man of the people. And Donald Trump has gotten him there. And that's why people are abandoning DeSantis lately. That's why their hope of like getting, they just don't like the annoyingness of Trump. But they're fine because they know that Trump isn't gonna sabotage big business. And then that graphic that they showed about Bidenomics, Trump versus Trump boom, you can go point for point through that when they selected the dates of everything, because Donald Trump took office before COVID completely annihilated supply chains, and he left office when and Biden took office when supply chains were in the, you know, early stages of being annihilated, and that coinciding with corporate profit, you know, land grabs essentially, like. It's easy to make a graphic like that.
Yeah, and we know that Fox News is not necessarily here for ensuring that the viewers get all of the accurate information and can make informed decisions, as opposed to presenting a story in the slant that they enjoy, which is something that Fox News is pretty good at, and they did a damn good job at during that segment. And we have more segments about slants that people may be using coming up soon, especially with these debates looming. We will have more for you when we get back. All right, now we are back in action. And unfortunately, so are a lot of the GOP as they enter the debate conversation.
Have the other candidates who are running for president, have they stepped up and supported Trump enough? And name some names, who has and who hasn't.
I'll name names. I mean, where's Ron DeSantis on this? Where is the Ron DeSantis that President Trump helped create his political career? He's standing there with a knife out, stabbing it in the back of President Trump. And the people are seeing this kind of behavior. This is a time to rally around the guy who's not being prosecuted. but being persecuted.
Oh, wow. That's failed gubernatorial candidate Gary Lake. And my God, does she want to be on that VP ticket with Trump? And of course, trying to attack DeSantis and also trying to set Trump up to be the victim here is really what she's leveraging. And we know that the DeSantis campaign, they really seem to be listening. And we know this after hundreds of pages of, let's say, blunt advice, memos, and internal pollings were posted online. And it was done so by the main super PAC that happens to back the Florida governor. What it did, and it offered us an extraordinary look into really what is likely to be DeSantis's debate strategy. Yes, that's right. Just a little background on this PAC. You know, we know that Ron DeSantis isn't allowed to legally collaborate with the PAC, but it is worth noting that the PAC, Never Back Down, isn't just supplementing the campaign's work. It has taken over nearly every aspect of the DeSantis campaign, staging events that the candidate attends as a special guest, running a bus tour through Iowa, and paying people to knock on voters' doors to sell them on the virtues of Mr. DeSantis. Yes, Never Back Down has big bucks, and they definitely seem to be very heavily involved in the DeSantis campaign. They had nearly $97 million in cash on hand at the end of June, and that's vastly more money than any other Republicans in the race, including the frontrunner, Donald J. Trump. Now, the documents that were posted this week on the website came on the website of Axiom Strategies. That happens to be owned by the guy who runs Never Back Down. So I'm sure you can see the connection. Well, the documents, this pretty much says what DeSantis's debate strategy is likely gonna be. This from the New York Times. There are four basic must-dos. One, attack Joe Biden and the media 3 to 5 times. State GRD's positive vision 2 to 3 times. Hammer Vivek Ramaswamy in a response, and defend Donald Trump in absentia in response to the Chris Christie attack. Yeah, that kind of lines it up. I like the 3 times, 4 times, 2 times. It really just tells you that they kind of need that level of detail and encouragement. And of course, the no attack on Trump policy is kind of notable too. Notably missing from the debate materials is a document focused on Mr. Trump, who has been attacking Mr. DeSantis mercilessly for months. The main strategy memo for the debate contains no mention of policy, and the advice steers Mr. DeSantis away from talking about specific solutions because doing so won't get him headlines. Yes, but defend Trump seems to be the way to go. He could say that Mr. Trump was a breath of fresh air and the first president to tell the elites where to shove it, then add that the former president was attacked all the time, provoked attacks all the time, and it was nonstop. Mr. DeSantis could then argue that Mr. Trump, who has now been indicted 4 times, faces so many distractions that it's almost impossible for him to focus on moving the country forward, and that this election is too important. We need someone that can fight for you instead of fighting for himself. Isn't that really nice? It seems to me, Brett, that DeSantis's PAC, even though he's not supposed to have a PAC, well, that they really want to teeter around not upsetting Trump's MAGA crowd. Is that what you're getting?
Yeah, I love this. It is so hard to be Ron DeSantis right now. And I think it's amazing. Ron DeSantis, so the hope of many establishment people, when they just heard that Ron DeSantis was in Florida being governor, GRD, Governor Rob DeSantis, Ron DeSantis, what they looked at was like, oh, I think it might be time to get away from Trump and change back to essentially business as usual. But the Republican voters don't like that. What they like about Trump is, even though he says things that are so stupid, at least it doesn't feel like it's scripted by some political consultant. And that's exactly what we have from the Ron DeSantis campaign. Another thing that, like, when we're talking about what a super PAC is and what a regular PAC is and what a campaign can do, they're not allowed to talk to each other. So because of campaign finance laws that, like, some of them still obey campaign finance laws. So you'll get these like dead drops is essentially what it's like. If anyone's seen spy movies, the spies are like, listen, I can't meet up with this person and tell Ron DeSantis in a room, this is what you should do for your campaign. And I definitely can't go into public like and you know, say it over the loudspeaker or on Fox News. So what they do is they put these things in like their little like essentially dead drop spots on things like buried deep in the website of the political consultant themselves, because the super PAC has no limits on how much money they can raise and how much money they can spend. So they do the polling and they do all the analysis and they do all that stuff. And what happened, people are calling this a leak, but this is how it's designed to happen. It's kind of hilarious when you call it leaks, because part of your brain is like, this has to be an accident. But no, they just did it dumbly. They have to put it somewhere where you can get it publicly so that they can say that Ron DeSantis just kind of happened on it randomly.
You don't think they could have just, like, I don't know, posted it in his neighborhood or something, a little less low key than a website that's accessible to all?
Absolutely. But like another thing is like how the type of advice, I'm going to show you some pictures of like where the things that the folks are seizing on when they say, with Donald Trump's team, what they're seizing on when they say, listen, Donald Trump built this guy's career. Of course he can't attack him. Like, here is an ad that Ron DeSantis ran when he was running for governor, basically saying that he teaches his kids all the Trump stuff. Here's another one. Here he is reading to his kid Art of the Deal and calling himself a pit bull Trump defender. Of course he has to do all that stuff. Of course he has to be in this weird position. And I think the only way that this guy has a snowball's chance in hell is if Donald Trump is literally in jail. You get people like Chris Christie that are coming out swinging and are saying, yes, like, Trump is bad. I am the alternative to Trump and I'm a prosecutor who's good on my feet. He absolutely liquefied Marco Rubio in a debate in 2016. Mm-hmm. The guy could not recover. That's why no one really talks about Marco Rubio anymore. The guy was just repeating himself like a broken robot. And Chris Christie was the only one who was able to like draw blood beside Trump in any of those debates.
And I just thought, yeah, Rubio wasn't getting like kind of the attention because, you know, he had a sponsorship with Dasani. Like, oh, that's honestly what I think of. Exactly. Like, just on the side. I will never forget that. And I just, I think that tanked him. But I love that you brought up Chris Christie, because there are things in the memos about how DeSantis could handle Christie. This also from the New York Times. It says, Trump isn't here, so let's just leave him alone. He's too weak to defend himself. We're all running against him. I don't think we want to join forces with someone on this stage who's auditioning for a show on MSNBC, making that as a potential response to Chris Christie when he attacks Trump, as we expect him to do. And of course, Christie had to defend himself after these documents hit the virtual streets. He responded in this way. In response to the documents, Brian Jones, the executive director of the super PAC supporting Mr. Christie, sent out a blast email to interested parties titled Debate Strategy for CJC. The only thing in the body of the email was be yourself and tell it like it is. Ooh, that's a hell of a response. Basically saying Chris Christie doesn't need one-liners. Chris is going to be speaking from the heart. Yeah, Chris is gonna slaughter them. Absolutely. Also, there was a key document in the documents titled Debate Memo, and this is dated like from August 15th, so it's very recent. It cynically describes how DeSantis could wring the most favorable media attention from the debate. And of course, that seems to be really setting up these potential orchestra pit moments, beginning with one drama making opportunity. And that's complete with this recommendation for a Trump style insult. This is basically what it says from the New York Times. Take a sledgehammer to Vivek Ramaswamy, fake Vivek or Vivek the fake. Related documents, one runs nearly 5,000 words across 17 pages show that the DeSantis operation advises portraying Mr. Ramaswamy as an inauthentic conservative. Mr. Ramaswamy, who has been creeping close to DeSantis in some public polling, is the only candidate about whom two separate documents describe vulnerabilities that Mr. DeSantis could attack. One lays out Mr. Ramaswamy's past statements about abortion, immigration policy, COVID masks, among a list of others. And the other is a lengthy opposition research document on his positions and past actions. And I find it to be really interesting on the attacks on Ramaswamy, in part because I'm like, oh, because he's probably one of the most vulnerable candidates given that he is a brown man. And so I think that that's really what's going on here and why they look to attack him. But of course, it also could be because he's somewhat surging, at least in New Hampshire. And that could have also played into inspiring the attack. Ramaswamy was at 1% New Hampshire in April, but he's around 11%. And as we know, well, DeSantis isn't doing so great. But check out these comments from Ramaswamy after he learned about these documents.
The super PAC behind DeSantis lays out four must-dos for the governor. And one of them is take a sledgehammer to you. So what's your reaction to that?
Well, look, I think the GOP sometimes when you have professional politicians, they use attacks on other candidates as a substitute for a message of their own. I'm in this race focused on the message of my own rather than attacking those other candidates. The truth is I'm an outsider. I'm not a professional politician. I think we have a choice between super PAC puppets who are being propped up with prepped lines and millions of dollars to go along with it versus, in my case, I'm an outsider. I think of myself as a patriot who speaks the truth.
Brett, was that persuasive for you?
Vivek Ramaswamy is a fake ass, fakey fake ass, but so is Donald Trump. And Vivek Ramaswamy is a brilliant human being. And he has studied Donald Trump and is emulating a lot of his moves. And if you go through, you know, if you followed Ron DeSantis' advice on Vivek Ramaswamy, you'd be able to go through the Trump's history before he became a politician and find a bunch of stuff that's counter to what he's saying now. That's just what happens. But also, if you want to talk about he would be going after Vivek Ramaswamy for doing what Donald Trump did. That's most of DeSantis's MO. This guy named Brandon from The Recount, I think, he did a side by side of DeSantis actually doing Donald Trump's movements. In what is very obviously an orchestrated attempt to appeal to like the lizard brain of MAGA folks. And the problem is, it's just easier to see through it with Ron DeSantis than it is to see through it with Vivek Ramaswamy and with Donald Trump, because they're just better talkers. They seem like they're being themselves. And hilarious that they say, yo, man, this is like when how you talk to people talk to their boss when they just want to suck up to their boss is what the advice was. Because like, I've watched this video. This is this guy. You want this guy to be himself in front of people? No, if you see this guy being himself in front of people, he's gonna embarrass himself. He's just got a weird smile. He doesn't know how to be a human. The guy goes up and has literally wiped snot on people's shoulders in public twice. He wipes his nose and he touches people. Like this guy, when he does his weird little laughs, it's just absolutely pathetic. And this guy, the thing that he and Chris Christie have going for them is they've been trial lawyers before. But in a trial situation, you already know what everybody's gonna say ahead of time. You just have to be organized. And unfortunately, this former JAG guy, Ron DeSantis, is gonna have the benefit of wearing like a really cute uniform.
Oh God, a really cute uniform. I like that. But I would kind of like to think Ron DeSantis' wife is going to pick out something lovely for Ron that includes little cowboy boots as well. We know he is very special. And someone else who's very special, which we'll touch upon very quickly, would be Tommy Tuberville. Yeah, he has been financially benefiting from his position in Congress, which is kind of interesting. The Alabama senator just disclosed that he's pocketed, what, $250,000 in future tradings in wheat, corn, soy, and cattle, despite overseeing these commodities on his congressional appointments. Yeah, on August 14th, Tuberville, who sits on the Senate Committee for Agriculture, Nutrition, and Forestry, reported multiple agricultural trades through June and July, all in the range of $1,000 to $15,000. And not only is he on this committee, well, he's the ranking member on one of the subcommittees. And he stated that he intends to give Alabama a seat at the table during the 2023 Farm Bill process, although it is clear that he intends to give himself a financial seat at the table. And the thing is, we know that this isn't the first time he has been called out or in a problematic situation for being a target over his trades. In 2021, he violated federal transparency laws when he failed to properly disclose trades worth more than $1 million on time. And his trades included the sale of stock options in the Chinese e-commerce company and so much more. And the thing is, we know that Americans hate this. There's overwhelming bipartisan majorities of Americans favoring prohibiting stock trading in individual companies by members of Congress. Of the 26,000 Americans surveyed, 87% of Republicans, 88% of Democrats, 81% of independents indicated that their support for banning lawmakers and families that lives with them from buying, selling, and trading individual stock. This is something that it seems all Americans can get on board with. But it seems that people are actually entering Congress so that they can have this financial leg up. I think this would be some kind of insider trading almost, but apparently the individuals who make the laws disagree. Brett, any thoughts on this?
Yeah, if you ask the average American whether it makes sense and is fair for politicians who write the laws to and create the regulations to then also bet in the market they have control over, you would call that insider trading. But it is not. People and it is so obvious and it is so basically populist progressive that even like Matt Gaetz is is running with this. He won't say it about Tuberville specifically, but then again, maybe he might as a cudgel because he knows that he's got the right position on it. And he even said there's a clip of Matt Gaetz basically saying like this should be illegal. You should not be able to buy and sell individual stocks. It should not be okay. And so he's proposing an amendment that will get, you know, that would make it illegal. And he says that every Democrat would vote for it. And they should. I mean, maybe not Nancy Pelosi because she benefits from that very directly. Maybe not Dianne Feinstein if it were to go to the Senate because, you know, she's benefiting from a lot of that stuff. And I don't think the people who have kind of got conservatorship over it would allow her to enact that kind of a policy. But this is very clear. And the question with Tuberville specifically is whether the guy is just straight up that corrupt. Or if he's so stupid that he would just go ahead and do this kind of stuff in front of everybody, not thinking that it's wrong. He just got elected saying, I love me some Trump. That's all I do. Nothing specific, no specific anything.
I actually disagree. Yeah. I think he also said, I hate women and minorities.
Yeah, that's kind of I thought of those two things as synonymous.
Okay. Sorry, just wanted to get that in.
But yeah, so that's kind of where it's at. It's really, really stupid. And I think a lot of us outside of the Beltway essentially, which is like the code for people in DC, the outside the Beltway people are like, I don't get that kind of benefit.
Nope.
Why should he, you know, that's like if you were in a casino and you could say, you basically knew what the next card was, but you were still able to bet on what the next card would be. And there are actually services out there. There's people that started doing this, that where you can go find out, because it does have to be, I mean, it's all like right under our noses. You can find out through the disclosures what financial moves people in Congress have made. And that kind of will tell you where their regulations are going and where their spending is going and where our tax dollar investments are going. So you can make those same stock market plays. And it is shown that in those situations, and this is not financial advice for anyone, obviously, it's just an interesting point, that a lot of people have had great success doing that and have actually outperformed the S&P and all those index funds that indicate how well the stock market is doing as an average.
It would seem that a lot of people would want to take that advice and move on it. Basically, who has the inside call on where the stock market is going to be, which is manipulative and incredibly wrong. And a lot of Americans seem to agree, but apparently Congress isn't doing anything on it. But there is something we are doing about at least this break. We'll be back. Fantastic. All right, we are back now. And We have some interesting stories for you because we know what Tucker Bell has his hands in stock pockets. And also it seems that George Santos has his hand back in headlines, of course, but it's not necessarily him, but one of his aides. You remember that aide who reportedly impersonated a staff member of Kevin McCarthy, right? Well, yeah, the dude is now facing federal fraud charges. This per the Associated Press. Sam Neill, 27, was charged with 4 counts of wire fraud and aggravated identity theft in an alleged scheme to defraud donors and obtain money for Santos under false pretenses. Prosecutors said Neill used a fake name and email address to impersonate a high-ranking aide to a member of the House with leadership responsibilities. Now, Neill was also charged with aggravated identity theft, which carries a mandatory minimum sentence of 2 years in prison if he is convicted. Now, Neill, who received a commission of 15% per contribution from the amount of money he raised for the Santos campaign, purported to be the McCarthy staffer to support the campaign and enrich himself through commissions, the indictment states. Neill created an email account posing as the McCarthy staffer to send solicitations to more than a dozen potential contributors and signed those emails using the employee's full name and official title, the charging document says. Now, as part of the prosecution's evidence, well, of course, there is a lot of evidence in writing. On September 26, 2022, Neill sent a letter to Santos wherein he admitted to faking my identity to a big donor. And Neill said he was high risk, high reward in everything he does. Isn't that nice? I love it, Brett, how committed the people around Santos are to fraud. It just, knowing that Santos is facing what, 13 counts right now that revolve around fraud, I'm just like, God, you're really just leaning in with your buddies too.
It's like that line in Casablanca where he's like gambling himself. It's like, I'm shocked to find out there's gambling going on here. And they're like, you're winning, sir. He's like, thank you. And he walks away. Yeah, I can't believe that someone in the Santos campaign was engaging in fraud themselves. I mean, I wonder if you get fired for basically impersonating the boss at that point. I don't know. It's just so perfect, right? The thing with Santos is when you found out more and more the things that he lied about, the more and more like you stop being shocked and kind of start being impressed. Like Eddie Izzard is a stand-up comedian, and they did like who did a bit about genocide. It's gonna sound dark, but it'll get good. He's like, you kill a couple people and people are like, I am shocked. But if you kill enough people, folks are just like, you killed 100,000 people? You must get up very early in the morning. Like it's, you can't wrap your mind around how big the lies get. And they don't directly affect me because I'm not like a Santos constituent. But at a certain point, I just kind of have to sit back and be like, you know what? Good on you. That's pretty impressive. And it's pretty awesome. And I feel like you can also get in under the radar if you're just like the person working for the guy, if you know that he is the one who probably is gonna catch the most fire for it. But then again, the person who is kind of in charge, it's like the calculation that you have to do, right? Where it's, I'm the little guy, do I escape the consequences because there's bigger fish to fry? Or do I suffer the consequences because the guy in charge is now such a high profile person that they'll just offer me to the slaughter before they'll actually get the guy who has more power than me?
Okay, so I kind of wonder if what's going on here is also getting more leverage against Santos. It's hard not to say DeSantos. You know, because if you charge one of his buddies who happens to be close to him, and he's also facing a 13 count indictment of which he says he is innocent, it'd be great if we could have someone testify to witnessing some of Santos's fraud, because as we do know that these two, Neill and Santos, have collaborated very much so in the campaign world and outside of it. For example, this also for the New York Times, Mr. Santos and Mr. Meehl have worked closely together over the years between June 2020 and January 2022. Mr. Santos's campaign paid Mr. Meehl and a Florida company tied to him more than $90,000 for fundraising efforts, according to reports filed with the Federal Election Commission. A 2020 recount fund set up to aid Mr. Santos paid $15,000 more for consulting work. So, you know, and I know there's even more about their personal intertanglements. And this really says that this individual may have information. And so now if he's facing a minimum of 2 years for each of these counts, he may be more willing to speak up. So I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up being maybe a canary singing a bit.
Exactly. Like, and this, and the meta analysis of this is like, this is Donald Trump's America. This is Donald Trump's party. There's ways that you've been able to lie, you know, there's ways that you've been able to lie and get away with it for years. And most people inside the Beltway understand how that works. They realize that you're supposed to make certain promises on the campaign trail. And then when you get into a position of power, you just don't talk about that stuff anymore. That's the normal. You say that you care about the average worker and the average person. And then when you get into that awesome office and you're making 170 plus a year and you only have to keep a couple terms going before you get that lifelong pension, you realize that you need to raise a bunch of money so that you can stay in office, and you need to deliver for the party so that you can get that kind of money. So there's a lot of people who kind of toe that line from inside their positions of power so that they can maintain the power, because that becomes more important to them than their constituents. But in Donald Trump's America, the brazen nature of the lies and the lack of accountability that he had for a good, really, there was a moment when it felt like he was going to be held accountable for the Access Hollywood tape. But that vanished. And the one takeaway was just lie, lie, lie. Doesn't matter why. Do what you can to get that money or that position. And the only thing you can do wrong is not the lie itself. It's apologizing for the lie. And so then you get these Frankenstein monster, like, you know, Godzilla radioactive monster versions of what Donald Trump is doing in Santos and his aides. And now is the time, it seems, right? Now is the time, it seems, that everybody is actually catching the flack for it. And Trump's getting indicted. Santos's aide is getting indicted. Santos himself is being, you know, called into question and facing some legal consequences potentially. It's just a matter of when people that have that much power have the resources at their disposal to drag their feet and prolong the consequences. And what's sad, I think I actually start, you know, relative to the other schmuckos, I feel bad for this guy, because he, you know, the question I posed earlier, he absolutely is going to suffer the consequences. Mm-hmm. The consequences that the more rich, the more powerful aren't going to suffer at all, probably. And if they do, won't suffer for years. And if Trump gets into office, he's probably just going to go like he did with the Blagojeviches of the world and pardon them all for doing stuff as brazenly insane as like auctioning seats in the Senate.
Although this is pretty brazen what Meehl is accused of doing, like the fact that you wrote in emails, change the name and put a name of someone else. It's just like, come on, man, how much more? It's like, this is not covert at all. This, you weren't stealth, you weren't smooth. Like he said, what, high risk, high reward? Like, get out of here. I actually think that to some extent, not only now can they use Meehl against Santos, but also this may have a little bit of McCarthy on it, because the fact that you used my aide's name to do this, they may need to set the precedent of, no, you can, you know, trade stock and use inside information, but you cannot essentially cross this line. So I'm not surprised, but I think you're absolutely right. I think this man is going to suffer, and he kind of should to a certain extent, because part of me is like, who did you think you were?
Yeah, and it's And with the McCarthy calculations in politics, it's just number of bodies that will go along with you. A number of people to say aye when you want them to say aye, and say nay when you want them to say nay. And the calculation for McCarthy isn't whether this is right or wrong. It's whether this person is controllable or an asset to me or not. And to a certain extent, you kind of, I mean, that's just politics. It's hard to design a system that isn't gonna have an aspect of that in it. You just hope that the media ecosphere and the way that voters feel about revelations like this is such that the voters themselves and the jury in certain situations when the person is being prosecuted will say, actually, there will be consequences for the actions we all know to be not only unethical, but probably illegal.
Mm-hmm. And we will see, and definitely we will see what else is going on, because I know we have more to talk about with the aftermath coming up. Brett, do you think that we are going to be able to have a Blue Apron Award winner?
Yes, absolutely. I'll do my homework during the break and we'll pick a winner. So get them in, everybody.
Yes.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.